Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Sound check. It's on your radio.
Sound check.
Listen to it with your ears.
Sound check. On the internet.
Sound check.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I remember a strange time in American history. It was a time of loose morals and dubious behavior, a time before we had the calming, dignifying presence of the internet or premium cable. We called it the 70s. It was a time when even turning on the radio could expose you to the unspeakable horrors of a society without scruples or conscience. But America overcame this dark period. Even that perverted libertine Rod Stewart has come clean, confessing at length to his many, many, many sins in a new memoir, and now releasing a hit Christmas album.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
We'll talk to the fine, upstanding Joe Levy of Billboard magazine about this remarkable transformation. And we've also got live music from Claire and the Reasons, who seem like very nice, demure young people. I like that. Oh, but the 70s. Listeners, you should have seen the 70s. Sex, nudity, all manner of shameful acts. They weren't hidden in corners. They were flaunted. Flaunted, I tell you, right on stage. In the world of musical theater, one of the safe havens for well-behaved Americans like me. Think of it, nowadays you can see an uplifting musical about those nice young Mormon people, or a play by that guy, what's his name, Mamet, that talks about selling real estate. That sounds pretty tame, right? But in the 70s, off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway, all forms of diabolical entertainments were arising. Adult musicals, they called them. And they had names like O Calcutta and Getting My Act Together.
If you let me make love to you, then why can't I touch you?
One of those adult musicals, called Salvation, even spawned this top 10 hit by Ronnie Dyson called If You Let Me Make Love to You, Then Why Can't I Touch You? If you can't tell already, we're going to be talking about absolutely disgusting subject matter. So send the kids off to church or something. Joining me now is Elizabeth Wollman, author of the new book, Hard Times, the American musical in 1970s New York City. Liz, good to see you again.
Thank you, you too.
So let's define our terms here. What is an adult musical?
That's a really good question. The way that I defined it was musicals that wrestle with some aspect of the sexual revolution, whether it be sort of increasing free love and changing sexual mores directly, or feminism, or the growing gay rights movement at the time. And this is specifically musicals of the 1970s that I was looking at.
Right. So the first fruits of what was happening in the 60s with the sexual revolution.
Yeah, and coming up with the term was hard because adult musical, I mean, I think adult musicals points to kind of like adult film or adult actors, which is kind of where I was going. But most of them, I think, are not what we would consider pornographic. Mm-hmm. So there were other, I was kind of thinking nudity musicals, but there's not, everyone doesn't have nudity, and sexicals, but that doesn't quite fit either. So
right,
adult
so,
musical stuck.
But you complained at one point that some of your friends were calling them porno musicals.
Right. which was sort of the first ones that I found were probably the most well-known ones. And everybody knows of O Calcutta, or maybe not everybody, but an awful lot of people know about O Calcutta because it ran for 100 million years and only closed in 1986 in its second revival, or its first revival, I should say. And then there was another musical called Let My People Come that ran for 3 years off Broadway and then had all sorts of national tours, and those too featured a lot of simulated sex and an awful lot of full frontal nudity with both men and women, but not all of them did. So initially, my reaction was, yeah, sure, they're porno musicals, but really there were only simulated sex and only kind of nudity doesn't make for a porn film.
Right. And then there's the role that the classic Supreme Court definition about pornography played in 1970s New York. The Roth case?
The Roth decision essentially said that you could only define pornography as having utterly no redeeming social value.
Mm-hmm.
That became a problem. I mean, it was such a vague definition because, first of all, what is utterly? What does that mean? And then no redeeming social value, all any porn theater needed to do or illicit massage parlor needed to do was put out a sign that said something like, great for your circulation or good for your love life or, you know, rejuvenating. And that would be redeeming social value. Mm-hmm. So it became very difficult to rein that stuff in. Mm-hmm. Now, when it came to musical theater, it was generally a lot tamer to have people having sex on stage. There were other venues where you could go do that.
Right.
I wasn't able to find one in which anything really, truly happened.
So the one that, yeah, I mean, there are several, as you mentioned, O Calcutta being a good example, that became very successful beyond off-Broadway or off-Broadway. But the one that really crossed over big time,
mm-hmm.
to the point that we don't even really think of it anymore as an adult musical, mm-hmm. is Hair.
Yes, which was kind of the first one. Broadway was kind of suffering financially a little bit, but especially creatively. I think that the youth movement in the 1960s, they were rejecting their parents and the previous generation as tastemakers, and they were demanding their own entertainment, which is where rock and roll comes from and all sorts of different signs of the time. But Broadway really kind of took a nosedive in that respect because the younger generation rejected an awful lot of it as, you know, well, you know, my parents went to see Oklahoma, but I don't care and I'm not interested and I want my own entertainment. And so there was an awful lot of very frank sex talk. There was stage nudity was pretty popular off Broadway and then also off Broadway to some extent. And Hair brought a lot of off Broadway innovations to Broadway. It was one of the first, and it was also the first musical on Broadway to feature nudity. So it sort of was the straw that broke the naked camel's back to some extent.
And while there are songs that are a lot bluer than the title track, that's the one that we're going to hear from Hair.
Gimme head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, steaming, flaxen, waxen. Gimme down the there, hair, shoulder length or longer. Here, baby, there, mama. A home for fleas, yeah! A hive for bees, oh, yeah! A nest for birds, ain't no words for the beauty, the splendor, the wonder of my hair. Blow it, show it, long as I've been growing my hair. I want it long, straight.
Hair from the musical of the same name, and we're talking about adult musicals with Elizabeth Wollman. She's author of the new book Hard Times, the adult musical in 1970s New York City. Liz, where did this? It didn't just like come straight to Broadway, did it?
What, Hair or adult
Hair.
Musicals?
Hair.
Hair. No, Hair started in the off Broadway realm, so it was basically Jerome Ragney and James Rado were two. They were trained actors. They had appeared on Broadway, but they met off. They were working in Joseph Chaykin's Open Theater in the mid-1960s. They started hanging out in Greenwich Village, which was really the site of the off-Broadway movement, and documenting hippies. They were just sort of they were kind of living the lives themselves, but they were also documenting people and what they said and what their concerns were. And then they shaped this show, and they were their original plan apparently was to bring it to Broadway, but nobody wanted to bring it to Broadway.
Well, now, which was, I mean, just listening back to that original sound of the title track from Hair,
mm-hmm.
what was the most offensive thing about Hair to the Broadway
conservative, you know, producers and stuff. Was it the subject matter, or was it the electric guitars and the drums?
It was a little of everything. It was about hippies. So first of all, there's that. And second of all, when they were shopping it around, it was really, I think that they had something like, I mean, the form was a little bit daunting. They had something like 44 songs in it, and it's not the most directly narrative musical you've ever seen in your life. It's sort of more like scenes in a life, sort of days in a life. So there's that. But I also think if two young long-haired freaks show up in the director's office or the producer's office and say, hey, man, we wrote this groovy musical. I can understand why maybe that was met with a little bit of concern. Mm-hmm. Joseph Papp, however, at the he was the head at the time, of course, of the Public Theater. And they had just reformatted it, and they had just opened it. And Papp was always really politically involved and very interested in political theater. And so he said, as long as you get a composer, as long as you get some shape to this, this will be the first show, the inaugural show. So it went from off Broadway to off Broadway. And then when it was off Broadway, it was seen by this liberal, very wealthy young man from Chicago who had political aspirations and who saw it, Michael Butler, who was just set aflame by it. And so he secured the rights and brought it to Broadway.
Now, you mentioned the unusual kind of structure, or maybe even lack of structure, of the narrative of Hair. When we go to the other name that people may know, O Calcutta, famous for its full frontal nudity, lots of nudity, both male and female. That, too, is kind of an unusual structure.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's unusual in the sense that a lot of the music is underscored. It's sung by the band, but not necessarily by the singers, by the actors, I should say. Mm-hmm. So there was the Pit Band that actually featured Peter Schickele before he became PDQ Bach.
Right.
And he was in the band, and then there were these two other musicians. All three of them had classical training and were really eclectic musicians, and they put together this sort of this show-long jam, I guess, where they did most of the singing, and then occasionally the cast would break into song, but it wasn't traditional in that respect. Otherwise, however, it was a bunch of sketches. So really, ultimately, it was kind of in a classic review form.
Right. Different authors, too.
Yes, it was written. Kenneth Tynan put it together, the dramaturg and the critic, the British critic, who put it together and asked a number of different people to submit anonymous sketches about their own sexual fantasies. And then he collected them and he put them together, and it was sort of an evening of different sketches that were contributed by all of the authors were kept anonymous at the time in the program. So they weren't credited, and it was kind of meant to be like a parlor game, who could guess who wrote what. But also at the time, it was to keep the people submitting from feeling embarrassed, because it was still kind of risky, I guess, to write about your sexual fantasies and put them on stage.
At what point did it become public knowledge that John Lennon was, in fact, one of the writers?
Things were rumored even at the time, like in some of the reception. There were some the press kind of got wind of who wrote what, and there were some. And then later books were written about it, and it became a lot more openly acknowledged who wrote what.
It was midweek in mid-May in the middle 1960s on a fair to middling day in Middle Village, USA. That two people named Clarence Coos and Mildred Susan Archer to be familiar in a most familiar way. Along the skin of 66, Clarence gunned his Harley. Nothing much of consequence working in his head. a modern metal monster for the citizens to dread.
Clarence and Mildred, from the 1969 original cast album to the musical O Calcutta. Someone trying very hard to do his best Bob Dylan impression there.
No kidding. There's that. And what's interesting about this is that as this is being performed, as this is being sung, what's happening on stage is there's a nude pas de deux. There's these two dancers, these two cast members who do this extensive sort of ballet to this piece, which was... O Calcutta got some very mixed reviews.
Yes.
Ultimately, despite its longevity, it wasn't well received by critics. But the one thing that an awful lot of people agreed with was that this was kind of the high point of the show.
So who got to see these shows? I mean, I started by asking you, what does adult musical mean? Did it mean that you had to be over 18 or 21 to get a ticket?
I don't, you know, that's a really interesting question. And I never read of any sort of information saying that people were turned away at the box office. But really, generally speaking, this was not something that you would take your child to.
No.
I was a child at the time, and remember that any request, because the O Calcutta poster was up over Broadway, Times Square for the longest time. I mean, it lasted till 86. And so in the 70s, I remember saying, hey, could we go see that? And that was always just kind of a resolute no. I've never met anybody in my generation that can say, like, oh, yeah, I saw Let My People Come, or I saw O Calcutta. So really, I think that this was kind of a nightclub atmosphere, even when it was in a traditional theater of older theater goers.
So who did go?
A lot of sort of middle class, middle aged and younger. Like, a lot of members of the counterculture did go. Mm-hmm. I spoke to a lot of people. Oh, yeah, I was 20 at the time and I went. I was so stoned, I can't remember anything. But, you know, that was kind of the standard answer to an awful lot. But a lot of people went. I mean, just people. I think that one of the things about these shows that's kind of fascinating to me is that they had a broader appeal than maybe the counterculture did initially itself. I mean, one of the things about the time period is that we romanticize just, oh, everybody in the 70s, the sexual revolution, and then thereafter they just threw off their clothes and had a lot of sex and did a lot of drugs. And really, that wasn't the case. There was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of reaction to this. The women's movement, the gay liberation movement were frightening to a lot of people. And one of the things that these shows, I think, did was allow people to live just a little vicariously or a little safely, as opposed to maybe like, oh, the live sex show down the street or the key party. That's terrifying to me.
Yeah.
I don't think I can do that. But, you know, O Calcutta is kind of safe and at a distance, and then it's yet immersive enough that it makes people feel like they're somehow included in what was going on.
Soundcheck listeners, did you ever go to see O Calcutta or Let My People Come or any of these adult musicals that Elizabeth Wollman writes about in her new book, Hard Times? If you have memories of these shows and they're other than the usual, I was so stoned I don't remember anything, you can share them with us on our website, soundcheck.org. Liz, the book is called Hard Times, the Adult Musical in 1970s New York City. How specific was this to that time and that place?
Well, New York was going through a pretty rough time, financially speaking. It came very close to bankruptcy. The city was economically strapped on just about every level, and this applied to the theaters. People stopped coming to New York as a tourist attraction. They didn't want to travel to the place that, you know, Travis Bickle kind of personified in a lot of ways. It really, by the early 70s, was not an inviting or warm place to come visit. And there was some interest, I think, in making a buck the easiest way you can. So there were some mercenary attempts to have actors take off their clothes, pay them scale, you know, not have to worry too much about costumes and put on a show. A lot of these were really hated by critics, if critics saw them at all, but an awful lot of them did pretty well, even if they closed pretty quickly.
Yeah. Let My People Come is this a post-Stonewall musical?
Yes, yeah,
so
it is.
This is, you know, the gay rights movement gathering steam, picking up speed, and kind of, you know, putting itself out there in a very literal way.
Yeah.
Here, this song is called I'm Gay.
How many times did I lie? How many nights did I cry? There's no other way, I'll just have to come right out and say
Don't pay much attention to them.
I'm hoping that you'll come to see. This is how God meant me to be. This is my way, and I'm proud to come right out and say I'm gay. I'm gay.
The song's called I'm Gay from the original cast recording of the musical Let My People Come. As with Elizabeth Wollman's book, Hard Times, the double entendre is certainly intended. First of all, this is pre-autotune,
obviously.
Yep, sure.
But this would have been, however transgressive to some people, this had redeeming social value
because
it was closely tied to a civil rights movement.
Yeah, Let My People Come opened in at the Village Gate in the early 70s, and I think I'm so bad with dates, but I think 1974, and it was put together in 1973, so well after Stonewall, but it was the first musical, and again, this was a review, but it was really the first of these adult musicals to sort of combine a sort of a rainbow of sexualities, it was produced by an out gay producer, and the music director was also an out gay man, and then Earl Wilson, who wrote the music and the lyrics, was straight, but the three of them decided that it really needed to reflect in a way that O Calcutta didn't. O Calcutta is almost rigidly heterosexual by design. And I think that the men that put Let My People Come together said, if we're going to be honest and we're really going to appeal to what's actually truthfully, honestly happening now, we need to reflect a much wider degree of sexuality, right? So they had a number about lesbians. They had two different numbers about gay men and this one, the act of coming out to one's parents. And it played to sold-out houses. It was the most high-grossing musical that the Village Gate offered. And people did try to prosecute it. The city tried to take the Village Gate's liquor license away as a result of their having the show there, but that never happened.
Was the Village Gate considered off-Broadway or off-off-Broadway?
Off-Broadway. Okay. That was, yeah, at the time.
Now, how well do these musicals stand up as music when you're not seeing naked people simulating sex? I mean, there are songs from Hair that have sort of penetrated our culture very widely. But what about the rest of these?
Some of these didn't really last the test of time because maybe you're not going to play some of this music for your kids and dance around the living room with them when they're five. So they don't enter the public consciousness in quite the same way. But a number of them were really striking to me.
Elizabeth Wollman is the author of the new book, Hard Times, the adult musical in 1970s New York City. And so is this a done thing? The 70s are long gone. Do you still hear echoes, the influence of these musicals today?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Where?
I don't think that we would have – I really don't think that we would have shows like The Falsettos and La Cage and shows that – I mean, Harvey Fierstein came from off Broadway, and he was, sort of came up in the same sort of area that a lot of these shows came out of. You see a real change in terms of the treatment of women in musicals as a result of, for example, I'm Getting My Act Together and Taking It on the Road. And they reflected a growing consciousness. I mean, some of the bigger ones, we could count Stephen Sondheim's Company as one, as sort of an adult musical. We could count, there was a big hit in the late 1970s on Broadway that also hasn't really lasted the test of time, but I Love My Wife, which is a Cy Coleman, like the most mainstream musical about partner swapping you've ever heard in your life. But clearly changing sexual mores kind of entered into the public consciousness during the 70s. I think that entertainment products like this did in some ways influence the tide.
The book is called Hard Times, the adult musical in 1970s New York City. Elizabeth Wollman with us on Soundcheck. And Liz, good to see you again.
You too. Thank you.
This is Soundcheck.
But tomorrow I hear
That's a song from the 1978 musical called Getting My Act Together and Taking It on the Road, which my guest Elizabeth Wollman mentioned just a moment ago. The song has a very 70s title, Natural High. Coming up, the Brooklyn band Claire and the Reasons tells us how Berlin shaped their new album, and they'll play in our studio. And later, our regular contributor Joe Levy of Billboard magazine is learning to love Rod Stewart all over again. We'll find out why. This is Soundcheck.